It says, what's an ocean wave made of? At first glance, nothing but salt water. But keep your eyes on it 10 seconds, 20 seconds. You'll notice the water is roused only momentarily by the wave, which passes it by. That the wave leaves the molecules and bubbles behind. That the wave, in essence, is a kind of ghost, freed from materiality by the dimensions of time. Made not of substance, but of energy. And likewise, with living bodies and rocks and all metabolizing matter, from atoms to stars, which all flow through space-time, uttering the abstract nature of the universe. So that's his idea about the abstraction of matter, and that basically we are energy. That I found that sort of fascinating. That we flow through space-time as energy, and then our energy is otherwise directed and yet, you know, maintained in consciousness. So it seems. It's like a paradox. That's Guy Murchie.
How do you spell the thing?
M-U-R-C-H-I-E.
Oh.
Excuse me, Sandy said, well, start, I'm going to get some more coffee. And a sliver
of coffee. You keep calling us.
Well, they do say that they're Rococo Biscotti.
Oh, they do?
Oh, they aren't twice baked like a regular biscotti.
And yeah, let's tell us all about those.
The ones we had in Naples, you did.
Yes, exactly. I mean, real
they were hockey. They were hockey pucks.
Exactly right. And they're designed all like that.
Yeah. I hope it's about dunking themselves. At least the Italians I know.
What?
I like these dunk there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like Italian pastry because it's not super sweet. Most of it is not, which I really like.
I like too.
Sadly, I like American pastry. It's
all good.
Who's in the black car?
I think that's
is that
one
of us? Or?
That's me.
Oh,
by the mailbox?
Yeah, that makes sense.
If we park in the front of the mailbox, the mailman yells at me.
Oh, he comes by this...
Sometimes he does.
Around 11, usually. Yeah.
He comes by my house about 3, so...
So they're starting on your road.
No, that is gas. I have no idea.
And they have to move the gas line before...
I have no idea. How many... city employees to take to drill a hole.
Yeah,
9 to watch and 1 drill.
Especially just like the Carmel house fires, change a light bulb.
Oh, how's it go? Oh, 9 to watch and 1 to do it. Or how many unions is it?
Someone.
Oh, how many unions does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Only one, but the light bulb has to really want to change. It'll take a long time.
How many Buddhists does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know.
Two. One to change the light bulb, and one to not change it.
Well, let's get started. So I think we're okay on the horse and the... 96 to 97. What we've just done, Mary Kay, is finish the last chapter, and then talked about the fairy tale where the girl escapes the demon by fleeing.
Yeah, I like that.
And right, and the idea what we were batting around was how certain complexes we go about integrating, and others we have to go about fleeing.
For the time being.
I think we pretty much did that. Yeah, just in sum, 97, four lines up, at first this cannot be accomplished in direct combat, but only through the magic flight. Objects thrown behind may be understood as sacrificial gifts, like that example of woman saying, I can't work in this CEO environment anymore. And there's a lot more of that tale, but she's just citing it for the purpose of showing now what, by examining fairy tales, what can we learn about the nature of projection? And the theme, what we're trying to learn about now is where the thing is so destructive. We have to work differently than the classical Jungian idea of trying to establish the transcendent function. Although you could say that the fact that we flee and it changes is a kind of transcendence. But you can't unite the opposites. Here you try to separate them.
That's an interesting aside. I don't know where it is, but Jung talks about how the beyond is where the horses run, land where the horses run.
Yeah. I did follow that.
That Jung had said the beyond is where the horses, land where the horses run.
Oh, that would be the transcendence, then, I think. Let's see. So, 98. Only the first full paragraph, only the flight itself matters. This whole paragraph might be worth reading slowly. So where can we pick up? Well, in the treatment of such devilish states of possession resulting from a negative father complex in a woman, I've often been impressed by the fact that the woman's ego is for a long time not strong enough to confront such an inner devil directly. And then that, usually I don't worry about the footnotes, but what she does add in the footnote is, and the same for the negative mother complex of the son, footnote 4. For the time being, nothing but methods of repression, repression and avoidance. Usually what we are working against. I lost my place. Repression or avoidance are possible, literally flight, through evasive measures. The disturbing factor has to remain outside the circle of the subject's life and can be neither conquered nor integrated. One can only advise the patient to stay away as far as possible from the situation and areas of concern that could touch the complex. In the event possession has actually taken place, therefore, defensive action and careful avoidance of the complex and of situations that constellate it are involved. At this stage, it is altogether appropriate to think of the complex as a threatening demon. That's kind of the whole point of this chapter. One can in no way hold the patient responsible for what has happened. But only, and now here is the horse bit, but can only help him to follow his healthy instinct, the magic horse, and to avoid everything that might provide an opening for what is destructive. In this situation, I think that exorcism can be completely effective for those who are still firmly anchored in the Catholic faith. But I think the big deal there is help him follow his healthy instinct. So you'd look for what are the person's interests, what energizes them, that's healthy. And then encourage that as much as possible. Okay. The next one is similar, but there is a transformation of the woman. A lonely girl has no parents and no husband, and she takes care of her house and she waters the reindeer with magic songs. An evil spirit comes along. She flees. So far, quite similar. But she throws behind her a comb. It becomes a forest. a red handkerchief, which turns into a giant fire. Then she transforms herself successfully into a polar bear, a wolverine, a wolf, and a bear, and in the form of the bear runs on. And then she goes on and meets the prince and so on. So, see, the difference is that she changes. In this version of the magic flight, not only does the heroine succeed in escaping, but the pursuer also transforms himself on his own, after a time, into her future partner, and with whom she can share her life. The trouble she goes to in order to avoid being possessed by the negative complex is in itself sufficient to bring out the latter's positive side. In this version, the magic flight is followed by a transformation flight, an equally widespread mythology. The girl transforms herself successfully into four animals. This is identical with the healthy instinct embodied in the magic horse in the Turkestan fairy tale. Here, I think, is another way maybe we could talk about the horse, the will to live. And to become whole conquers the temptation to fall into the jaws of the earth. Whether the pursuer is essentially good or evil is apparently not the main consideration. It is the state of possession in itself that is destructive.
That's the key here.
Go ahead, Jane. What
that's the key in this one, right? In this fairy tale, that's the will.
The will to live or the...
That it's not especially whether what you're possessed by, whether it's good or evil. But the state of possession itself is destructive.
Yeah. I think... For possession, you could substitute the word one-sided. And you could be possessed by goodness, and it works against you if you have to deal with bad people. I've got talking to somebody like that now. A very good person who is always good and is exhausted. I mean, exhausted with life. Because nothing comes back. And that, I think, is just as harmful as, at least to her, as being possessed by nastiness or meanness. She's got more friends and actually a very successful position, but she can't go on like this.
Is the state of possession then itself is being destructive? That is evil.
That's a good question.
Sucks the life right out of you.
Certainly sucks the life out of you.
I think it's like workaholics.
Yep.
Somebody who they spend so much time working that their whole life is transformed by that.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of good, but there's also a lot of evil that comes through it, being one of their personality.
Workaholic, even good liberal Christians, I think, can suffer from this if they are demonized by graciousness. They can never get upset. They can never tell somebody to go to hell. They can never fight. They can't see manipulative people and their harm and so on. Is that evil? I don't know.
I think anything that drains energy, and energy is life, is by definition, evil, right? Because mm-hmm. if it's anti-energy, it's anti-life, and there's a...
That'd be a way to put it.
I mean, there's a wrongness to it, even though it may look perfectly good on paper and sound good, in a textbook or whatever. But I think if your energy gets sucked out by it, it's by definition bad, because it's not in the direction of further life. It's in the direction of death. But not living your way fully into death, but like getting sucked out prematurely.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how I have it. Your body never lies about, I think, what's in the direction of life and what's not in the direction of life.
That's
your brain will fuck you up every time.
Yeah.
You gotta be good.
Yeah.
That reminds me of the first three lines of that Mary Oliver poem, which I just love. She says, "You do not have to be good. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves."
Yeah.
And I think she has it right there about what we're good lie.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I also retreats this morning. She refers then to I think the next bit is about spirits, whether good or bad, and the importance over the top of 100 for anyone who's working with other people's complexes to have first cooked in their own. That's sort of the end of a theme. She shifts now a little bit, and she starts talking about what makes a complex so vicious. I don't think this totally answers that question, but it's a place to begin thinking. Or you might say, what turns a normal complex into a demonic complex?
Down here at the bottom of the page, is she talking about a complex or a person when she talks about the cripple?
A complex. Or a person, a complex in a person who's gone through a certain type of experience. Well, just to sum up, this fairy tale will be about a guy who burns his feet off.
Yeah, this is the creepiest fairy tale I've ever read. I can barely read
about. That's probably a healthy reaction.
I guess her first line through me then says sometimes a person who's otherwise healthy will be turned into a demon through being crippled. She speaks as though she's just talking about a person.
I think it's a person possessed by an complex. Mm-hmm. He's a person, but
yeah,
he becomes possessed by this complex. Mm-hmm. And then he's really a demon. And mm-hmm. How do you deal with people who are possessed by complexes? Do you treat them like demons?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I guess I was thinking along the lines of whether or not they are she's talking about the conscious or the unconscious. That was my dilemma.
Well, you know, she's back to her everything is everything mode.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get stuck, I try to think of examples. And I think of a woman who was a very talented artist raised in a family of mathematicians,
mm-hmm.
and was only allowed to do art if she got A's in all her math classes as a kid. See what I mean? That cuts off the feet of her inner artist. So it's what she is subjected to, but then what that does, it produces a complex inside herself of the same nature. So that's when she says person, you could say person / complex in a person. And the parents did the same thing to her when she was a teenager. They were trying to just make sure I don't say anything, don't give it away hints, but they were very active in the civil rights movement. And even, I think, like national figures. And the girl brought home a black boy. Forbidden.
Wow.
Seriously? Yeah. Wow. That cut the feet off of her love life. Plus, not to mention the hypocrisy. So, you can see that the complex comes out of a personal experience, but then the complex takes on the shape of the personal experience. And guess what? The woman was incredibly argumentative.
Argumentative.
Oh, I think. Oh, my ears. Well, it's repressed argumentativeness that I think does lead to arthritis.
Yeah, I like what your ears think.
Yeah, there's a see, there's a secret spirit in that complex.
It's so funny because I was yawning. That's why I think.
That's a perfect example of the wisdom of a complex. We're smarter than we know. Well, I just touched on the main points of the story. Two brothers, and one brother stumbles on a party and ends up burning his feet off in a fire and then hacking them off and then attacking his brother after that. So there, I think, she's talking about, now remember, what makes complexes so negative? Well, cutting off their standpoint. An artist who has to be a mathematician, a natural, open attitude towards relationship, even fostered by the family, then chopped down when it's lived out. So she, just so you see, she's gone from what complexes cannot be integrated. How does that work? That's the first thing Ferry does. And now she's gotten on to what causes complexes to be so difficult. First two were about integration. Now it's what makes them so difficult.
And so this, he would have maybe have had this complex anyway, but because it got cut off from its expression or standpoint,
right,
expressing itself in the world, then it became demonic.
Worse. Yeah. In other words, what makes a complex so difficult as to not be able to be integrated? And I don't think this is a complete list, but she's just getting us to think, what turns us this way?
But there is a healthy aspect to this pair of brothers, and that's the one who doesn't go party because he has a fear, and this could be a positive complex in him that keeps him from engaging what the other brother does, and then he does run away as well and goes to the community in order to kill that negative complex within himself.
Yeah.
Could that be someone who, if we would describe this as a person's psyche, who then goes to the church or in order to...
Or like the horse.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the community could be the healing aspect.
Certainly can be. Okay. Again, for where we are, probably people who are coming in to do Jungian work are already part of the community. Just you got to remember what an enormous psychological accomplishment it is to get to one place on a regular time and pay for it. Mm-hmm. Many people, that is too much. I have some friends that work for, you know, I don't know what it's called now, but for Midtown Mental Health, what it's called, Midtown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe three of the 8 appointments would show up in a day. Not because the people were responsible. They were just too depressed, or they forgot, or they were hallucinating to get there. So in that case, you know, when you're dealing with such a pathology, sure, the community is healing, but for most of us, we're probably so communally adapted that we have to go in the other direction. But this chapter is on the difficult. Next chapter will be on the healthy and the creative.
Can you say something about why the first brother then became so, you know, contaminating, wanting to possess his brother?
Well, within the story, I think, because that's what happens to people who cut off their talent. They suck you dry. They got to get that energy somewhere, from somewhere.
They want the same thing for you almost. They want you to
get... Well, they want your energy. Because they don't have a way of giving it to themselves.
Mm-hmm. They want to kill your capacity to live your own
life. Or they want to kill your capacity to kill your own life. Mm-hmm. There you can see how, if you've been the victim of, let's say, talent killed, that then produces an inner talent-killing complex, which then is passed on when you meet somebody else with talent. Apropos evil, I like what you said. The other, I'm still trying to define some of these for myself. I think one of the other characteristics of evil is that it needs to propagate itself. Mm. What's done to you then has to be done to somebody else. Or you go through one hell of a battle. That's why sick parents raise sick kids.
So they either act out against other people or against themselves? Could they turn that, interject that into themselves?
Well, they could, but I think most of the time it's always both. Unless they go into a process of inner inquiry. And even then, if it's a demonic complex, it is so hard to stop it. Even if you can stop acts of commission, it's harder to stop acts of omission. Mm-hmm. So that you may not persecute the child, but you can't give to the child.
Mm-hmm. Is it that I can't receive? Is it that they can't receive?
And they probably can't receive either. Yeah.
Or that the complex is so... I'm just thinking of something my daughter's dealing with right now.
Yeah.
You know, the complex is so strong because of his life events that even... You know, the loving care that she's trying to give him, he can't receive. He receives it in the moment, but then goes right back to suicidal thoughts.
Yeah.
And
well, that's the complex of it.
And violent, you know, ideation.
Mm-hmm. That's the complex. That's the demon. That is a perfect example. And you can, I mean, you just see how, when a person is in that state, how unadapted they are. He probably has no relationship with the community.
And he's been out of foster care since
he was a baby. That's a demon.
Yeah. It's a sad situation. And yet he's brilliant. He's a brilliant kid. And those combination, evil and
good. Mm, that's dangerous. Uh-huh.
That's what she's very frightened.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry, it's depressing, but next job will get better. But this is the reality of a day in the life. You know, people come in with these levels of distress, and I think if you find it depressing, the hopeful thing is we have tools. Mm-hmm. But learning the tools means facing this is what life can be like. Okay, we got another one. Then how do complexes get negative, and the other is murder. But I think murder, in a way, is very much the same as chopping off the feet. when a talent is killed, it turns demonic. I don't think we need all the details in that tale, or you okay with that? Go over to 102. A couple of details. How, when someone is killed, they wish to remain with their people.
So we're also talking about actual murder of someone.
Yes. But remember, she's speaking out of a symbolic mind where she says one thing, but she expects us to interpret it into its metaphor meaning.
So you don't think she's also talking about an actual?
I think you could, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
You could also talk about being psychically killed. Like,
right.
Has been psychically killed.
And that's how evil propagates itself, right? See, the murderer doesn't want to die. He wants to, like, suck everybody else down with him. So I think it's exactly what you said, like, in a symbolic way that evil propagates itself. I mean, I think it's the same thing with the murderer coming back and haunting people.
Absolutely.
Right. If we look at Wuthering Heights, with Kathy coming back as the spirit, that's the same thing. She comes back and frightens everyone and then ends up killing
Some of you heard when we did Answer to Job, the dream of Victor the Russian. And in that dream, actually dreamt by a professor of theology, Victor the Russian is evil and he has to reincarnate himself every couple hundred years. Mm-hmm. And he goes around looking for somebody to turn into the next Victor the Russian. Mm-hmm. This was dreamt when Russia was, still
the evil empire.
Mm-hmm. But this idea that it has to propagate itself mm-hmm. is central, I think. The other thing I wanted to mention, just to your question, Carol, whether you see it external or internal, some of you heard me say this, but I think creativity really is meant to serve the society. And so if it's killed, society suffers. And that's why the killed talent still wants to belong to the human community. The dream I had once was creativity is the spiritual counterpart of the evolutionary process. One of those one sentence dreams. Creativity is the spiritual counterpart of the evolutionary process. And just as we evolve physically through evolution, I think we are also, bad choice of words, programmed to evolve culturally, spiritually, psychologically. And so the pressure that nature puts into evolving physically, it also puts into evolving culturally. And that's what creativity is. So when it's killed, you're not just killing one person's talent. You're killing the gift that talent is supposed to represent to the community. And that's how I would understand her comment, Carol, that or the background to her comment, why killed creativity is so vicious and has this social aspect to it. It's like a person with killed creativity becomes a leech on society. But the impulsion is to be a part of society because their gift can't make its contribution to society. Your painting of the snake, I think, is paradigmatic, where it's a social statement.
I realized something about that painting this week. When I made it, in Istanbul, there is the Blue Mosque and then there's the Hagia Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
And they appear to be the same building.
What do you mean?
Look at them.
Oh, you can't tell?
No.
Physically, they look very similar?
Except for the number of turrets.
No kidding.
And when I made the painting, I thought I was painting the Hagia Sophia. And it turned out I was painting the Blue Mosque, so that's why I called it the Blue Sophia, which was also sort of a wordplay on the idea of the energy of Sophia as the thing that mm-hmm. carries the pattern of our faith, and that, you know, she wasn't happy. Blue, so that's the Blue Sophia. But then I started to think about the Occupy movement as being a sort of twin to the Arab Spring. In the So thus the double statement mm-hmm. made by the unconscious as to whether it was the Hagia Sophia or the Blue
Mosque. So Hagia Sophia, is that Christian?
Yeah.
And the other one is Muslim?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you know the painting? Have you seen it?
Yeah.
We passed around it.
So I thought about that this week.
Yeah.
That explained to me as I started thinking about this movement that's going through the Western society, about that sort of explained to me why the image was presented to me in that confusing way
mm-hmm.
in the beginning, as to whether it was east or whether it was west.
Interesting. See, it's even more mm-hmm. freaky.
I know. It has more to say. Now, who would have expected it to have more to say all of a sudden?
Yeah, damn it. Sorry? What did you say?
Everybody is a symbol. It's not a sign. Exactly.
Well, I brought that up just to show how that painting speaks to all of us. So had somebody forbidden you to be an artist, we would all have something less to think about. Mm-hmm. See what I mean? That's why killed creativity is so vicious. Mm-hmm. It's not just about, it is about killing your own talent, but it's about killing what that talent is meant to give.
Right. And I suppose, basically, when I asked you that question, I was thinking about how it works both ways when she speaks about spirit, because someone who is murdered can become a demon.
Yeah.
You know, in our reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, say, that guy, you know, who was haunting the apartment of my friends in Zurich. Probably need a ritual to get him out of here, back to wherever you go. I think the first thing in the Egyptian book of the dead is you got to convince the dead person they're dead,
mm-hmm. or see what they want. The Celtic tradition that my mother comes from,
mm-hmm.
if the spirit appears, the most important thing is to ask it what it wants.
Now that's. That's Irish for you. Really? Because, I mean, that's one thing I love. I'm like 1/16th Irish or 1/32nd, but I have an Irish anima, so I've had to work on this pitch, pardon me. And in Ireland, it's the only country I know where the witch is transformed through affection. And other myths, she's slain. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge difference of the Celtic tradition. Yeah. So I'm not surprised that they would carry that over to the dead spirit. Okay. Let's see. Where are we? She talks a little bit about rabies. And one thing I didn't understand was her reference to Kant and Goethe.
I was going to ask you, but did they have rabies?
Not that I could
that's
see.
That's what I thought at first. Then I looked it up. I think she's just making a reference to outstanding people. You know, that's her general outstanding people or continent group.
No, when we recall that this virus could slow and slave an outstanding...
Even they could be influenced by a little virus. Even
maybe.
Our most outstanding example of humanity. Mm-hmm. Kind of
as far as I could see, they didn't.
No.
I think Kant died sort of Alzheimer's, or in a demented state. But Goethe, Goethe sort of, I think he was kicking until the very end. But how autonomous complexes have a way of disintegrating us. They take the life out of us.
But this would really be an example of cycloid, right? Where the spirit and matter come together. I mean, like this.
Of sucking the energy out of us?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why in the vicinity of people who are possessed, one often experiences a sudden fatigue and an inexplicable feeling of having one's vitality sucked out. And dogs, I think, for example, will stay away from schizophrenic people. They just, I mean, don't have to be acting crazy. They won't go near. That's psychoid.
Makes you wonder why the cat goes to the room of the person who's going to die.
That would be psychoid. I don't know why, but that certainly would be psychoid.
I think that's also that. So why would that cat want to do that? But that's what they want to do.
Well, when people die, the membrane between this world and the next gets really thin. I mean, it can be a very exquisite energy in my experience. You know, so it doesn't have to be like tragic, like they're dying and energy is lost. I mean, my experience of those moments is it's very energizing in a, I don't know, ethereal maybe isn't quite the right word, but that, I mean, when you sense the membrane between this world and the next getting thin, it's a very, I mean, delicious in a way, and you're very bittersweet too. So I think maybe the cats like that.
It's definitely a change of energy.
Are you saying that of patients or people in their own life?
Both. I mean, it depends on how the death goes, you know, and all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's an amazing moment. Mm-hmm. So cats like energy of like almost any kind. Of, you know, there's energy can be not always easy to live with, but there's a difference between having energy there and then sucking the life out of you. Like it's a completely different thing. So death doesn't suck the life out of you. I mean, it's a very, I think, a transformative, energizing moment, or can be, in my opinion.
For everybody.
I mean, everything that's there, like the room, I mean, everything is filled with that energy. You know, it's quite palpable. It can be, you know, in my experience. I think cats like it, and it's quite amazing to be around.
So the crystal.
Okay. Now I think we can skip a bit. She goes into all different categories of demons. I think we can skip over to 105. Maybe just a good couple of sentences to read because it's so pithy. See in 105, not quite halfway down, Jung emphasized that the demonic works with negative effect, mainly at that moment when an autonomous, unconscious content of seemingly overwhelming power appears on the threshold of consciousness. Then it will lay hold of the personality in the form of possession. I guess that's evident, huh? Before such a content is integrated in consciousness, it will always appear physically because it forces the subject into its own form. So that was a really important couple of sentences.
Can you give us a for
instance? Well, do you ever notice when you're around somebody really sweet, you tend to be a little nasty? Because they're projecting their shadow out, and you become what they're projecting. I don't mean genuinely sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean saccharine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if you're around somebody who's really in a rage, you'll quiet down.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're projecting the opposite onto you, and you become what they are projecting. I think that's one of the worst things about being around people who project. You become what they are projecting onto you. It's a great danger in our work, you know. Somebody comes in thinking I'm quality X or Y. Sooner or later, I will act like that, and they say, "See, you bastard, I told you." And certainly for kids, it's extremely dangerous.
Because they're so open?
Yeah.
But can't that be used in a positive?
If it's a positive
way.
Projection, sure. Yeah.
I'm just thinking, you know, in some of the cases that my daughter's working on, how, you know, what she's projecting out can be helpful.
If she can manage to not be shaped into what they're projecting on her, this is what's so difficult. And why, you know, projecting people have rotten lives. They say, well, people treat me this way. Yeah, they do, because you are dreaming them up. That's the word Arnie Mandel uses, which actually I think is a kind of a good one, for when somebody projects onto you and you become what they're projecting. Or the way Jung puts it is that what really shapes the child isn't what the parent does, it's the fantasies of the parent about the child. And the child will become those fantasies. And again, if they're positive fantasies, which in most cases they are, we wouldn't even be here. But if they're negative fantasies, then it's not so great. So this is how, you know, preacher's kids turn out to be rascals. If the preachers are going around thinking the whole world needs to be saved, well, that's their shadow projection, and the kid becomes what the parent's projecting.
That sentence, before content is integrated into consciousness, it will always appear physically.
Right
after the...
About right about the middle of the page.
Just the thing you just read, right after footnote 17,
mm-hmm.
and before 18.
Is that just because it needs to be in a projected form? I mean, it needs to be objectified?
Yeah, that's a powerful statement.
Well, I was just thinking of it, and I understand your examples, but it doesn't... That seems more psychological
mm-hmm.
becoming. And this does appear physically, so I'm...
Well, it could be a synchronicity.
Or even an attitude, or if it's something someone projects upon you, you assume that attitude.
I think that's what she's talking about.
When she says physically.
Yeah.
She means psychological.
Yeah, that psychology is so real that it can affect the way people behave physically.
Oh, okay.
But I think it could also refer to synchronicity.
I'm thinking of a girl I work with, and she just divorced her cheating husband, and 2 months later now she's involved with a guy who's just, the way she talks to him, you're like, oh, that has disaster written all mm-hmm. over. He's going to buy her a house. I'm like, oh, come on. He's going to be 2 months, really? And she's just so excited, and I'm like, I don't know what to say to you. You know, because she just steps from one disastrous relationship to another. And she just attracts guys who are going to... She's looking for a savior, and mm-hmm. they... What happens when you look for somebody to save you is as soon as you are in this safe cocoon, you may start being the person you need saved from, and it's just...
Mm-hmm.
Written, I mean, everybody can see it but her, and you can't talk to her. It's just a disaster.
And what I think, another dimension here is, if she would go into a room with 10 guys, the one guy who would play that role for her will be the one who comes up to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, and that's like mm-hmm. bad magic. I think that's
yeah.
also what she's referring to. We break down the separation between psyche and matter at these points. Remember I told you about that guy who I thought was hopping for an affair and
yeah.
then the woman was hopping for an affair and they met at a party. You know,
that you knew before they actually met?
Yeah, I knew each of them separately.
Oh my gosh.
And he was hot to trot and so was she.
Uh-huh.
No, didn't have any connection with each other. And in a city of a million people within 2 weeks they had met at a party. And he said to me, oh, guess who I met? And I almost jokingly said, let me see, does she have brown hair? Is she 5'4"? He says, oh, she's 5'4", she's got brown hair.
Oh, for sure.
Is her name? Yes. Oh, my. No, I didn't say what her name was. He told me what her name was. And, yeah. I mean, that's how these complexes work.
Mm.
call it metaphysical, I don't know what, but there's like a space-time warp sometimes. I don't know if you heard me tell the whole story, but he did not have an affair. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We worked on it. Uh-huh. And she did have an affair with somebody else, which was a disaster.
Of course.
I think even lost her job over it. Bad situation. But he worked on it and changed his whole life out of it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did he project on you? What part did you have in this? This is really interesting.
I was pure.
That's a big waste for
discussion. And it worked.
It didn't have the
event. I was Mercurius, I think, probably.
Okay.
Often we are in the role of Mercurius, mm-hmm. helping make these connections. In that case, the interconnection.
Which he made.
Yeah, which he made. And she did not, no.
Well, you weren't working with her, though, right? Isn't that what you said? You weren't working with
her? I was not, but I knew of her story through some other people, yeah.
It's not like you were just...
No, I had nothing to do with their connecting or not connecting. Or maybe someone to do with her not connecting.
On page 104, she talks about the reality of spirit. I'm just wondering, do you come across that in your work where people have dreamed of the dead speaking to them, and that seems to be an objective thing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I sure have.
Mm-hmm. I'm sort of interested in that as my mother is approaching death.
I just saw one recently. Again, how do you know? They feel different. Mm-hmm. They feel different. Those dreams
they
just
do.
Feel, they
well,
feel different.
And they're specific, because sometimes I dream of my dead brother-in-law, and he comes to me, but it'll be like in a room, and he'll be sitting there, and I have to approach him. He doesn't come to me. I don't know what that little bit of ritual is about as far as the dead are concerned, but I find that when I dream of the dead, that they want me to come to them in the dream. And then he'll ask me about his wife, who had a really difficult time with his death.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
See, that's so specific. And he would ask about her condition from time to time until we got to the point where I told him she's back to her old self. And then he stopped appearing.
I could very easily believe that was something. Well, yeah, the story, somebody heard the story about Jung and the von Franz and the woman who lost her husband. Some of you heard this. She might even tell it in here eventually, or she tells it somewhere. I heard it as well. She was seeing a student who was seeing a woman. She was supervising a student analyst whose patient or client was a woman whose husband had been killed in an air show. And she, not only did she lose her, not her husband, her fiance. Not only did she lose her fiance, she was there. She was at the air show when he crashed. So she was completely traumatized. And the woman analyst couldn't get this young woman to stop dreaming about her boyfriend. She was just tormented by these dreams. And so she took the dreams to von Franz, and von Franz said, well, basically we're dealing with an animus projection, and we've got to find a way to help her own within herself what she projected onto him, except for these four dreams. Don't interpret these four dreams. These are this young man's spirit coming back to talk to her. And von Franz said, the woman was irrationalist and said, oh, bullshit, and got up and left and went to Jung. And took the dreams to Jung, and Jung looked at the 10 or whatever, 15 dreams, and said, well, basically we have a situation here of a woman who is projecting her animus onto her dead fiancé, and she needs to find these qualities in herself, except for these four dreams. Don't interpret those.
Wow.
So there is something, and it is of this nature that they're inquiring, they want to know, they're restless, they don't... nowhere to go. And I think we got to say, like in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, if you can be clear, you know, here's what's going on. What do you want to know? Can I tell you what you want to know about life here? And you're dead.
Yeah, and Jung talks about it somewhere. Is it in Memories, Dreams, and Reflections that the dead don't know what's going on here?
Yeah.
And that's why they come to us.
Yeah, and do need to know. Yeah.
And they don't know they're dead.
And they don't.
Well,
they don't fully know that death means you got to leave.
Oh, last time. Well, they usually know they're dead.
Well, I was going with the Book of the Dead, where they're told they're dead. But I mean, that they haven't been, that we think, oh, you die, you go to the other world. No. You die, you have to leave this world in the dead state, and then go to the other world. That's what I get. Yeah.
You have to leave this world in the dead state.
Yeah. That the dead have to know, here's the way it works in death. And if you're unfinished in life, then you may need to be told what you need to finish so you can move on. And it's of this nature that you're worried about somebody or...
Well, like I had a dream of my mother-in-law and she's still working on stuff.
Could be. Well, you know, that dream that Jung told when before his mother died, within a few weeks before his mother died, his dad came to him and wanted some advice on marriage counseling.
His father was dead already. His mom was dead already.
And the best one is when I went to Zurich the first time, I had no money and I stayed in this very inexpensive but nice Ponzi on the call, like a working class rooming house. And I found it in Europe one. It was those days still $5 a day. And I went, I'll never forget her name, Frau Zusli Minder. So I went and knocked on Frau Zusli Minder's door and I said, you know, I'm here, I need a room for about a week before I get situated. Do you have something for you? She said, yeah. And she said, well, why are you in Switzerland? And I said, well, I'm here to study at the Jung Institute. And she said, oh, he sent another one. I said, what? She said, we're going to have tea someday. So she invited me for tea, and she told me the story that she went to a medium once a year, and the medium channeled Jung to her. And that Jung said that he and Freud were doing research together on the other side, and they had patched up their differences.
Oh, wow.
Well, take it for what it's worth.
Just give me a cold chill.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, it's time to go enjoy the day.
Very good. But we have been.
Let's see. You read up to 121. How far we get down today?
Well, we said we were
going to. I don't think we'll get past 121 next time, so just stay with that.
121.
Till the end of the chapter on demons. I think we have two more meetings a week before Christmas. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Gary. And Sandy.
And
yeah.